Hello, plantpreneurs, and welcome to Series 4 of the Plant-Based Business Podcast, brought to you by the team at Vevolution. I'm Eric Amundsen, your co-host and co-founder at Vevolution.
And I'm Damien Clarkson. You will know me from previous seasons if you listened. I'm also going to be co-hosting the occasional episode in Season 4. I'm excited to welcome Eric to the podcast as we expand Vevolution and our reach to listeners around the world.
Over the last year, Vevolution has built the world's leading plant-based and cell ag network and investment marketplace. On the show each week, we explore what it takes to create and scale a plant-based business. We'll interview the best entrepreneurs and investors who are building solutions for a better and kinder world.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in each week to be inspired by entrepreneurial stories, tips for fundraising for your business, state of the industry insights from leading investors, and success stories from Vevolution's new investment marketplace.
Hey, Eric here. Thanks for listening. A quick word from our sponsor, Plant Belly. There are so many vegan grocery products out there nowadays, and it's amazing. But with all these options comes a lot of trial and error to find the best of the best. It happens to all of us. You buy something that ends up being a little disappointing. But what if you could have all the best vegan products put together in one place and shop them easily on your phone or from home? That's where plantbelly.com comes in. It's a new online vegan grocery store that delivers highly curated plant-based foods right to your door. PlantBelly has hands down the best selection of outstanding plant-based foods I've ever seen. I especially love that you can shop by ethos to find brands owned by women or BIPOC makers. I, for example, always search the latest seafood or deli products. It's a great selection. PlantBelly.com is a team of foodies, vegans, and passionate supporters of small batch makers. And they've handpicked only the tastiest plant-based eats to feature on PlantBelly.com. You can use code VEVOLUTION to get 20% off your first order at plantbelly.com. That's VEVOLUTION to get 20% off your first order when you visit plantbelly.com. Now back to the show.
Eric Amundsen here, and today I'm joined by Moyad Abushakadem, founder and food scientist at Foodative. Foodative is a plant-based ingredients company based in Rotterdam, Netherlands, producing solutions to sweeteners, fats, and dairy. Moyad, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Eric, for the amazing introduction. Very happy to be here.
What's new in Rotterdam? Are you there now?
I am. Well, the weather is improving, so I think that's a really good sign for any Dutch person. So that's really the good news.
So you've been with Foodative now for a while. It's been kind of a long journey for you, but just to get us started, can you tell us, you know, what is your business and what problem are you solving?
Well, Foodative definitely started with the mission of producing the first sweetener that can actually provide functionalities like sugar. And we wanted to produce a sweetener that actually ethically and sustainably produced. First, we started with a sweetener being produced from upcycled apples and pears. And that journey really brought us to a next level. We learned a lot along the way. And now after 3 years and a half, we now have 7 products that we're extremely proud of. Our sweetener is quite tastes good and it functions similarities of sugar. So that's why we're solving the sugar issues.
And can you tell us kind of about your professional background, you know, your entrepreneurial journey? You know, where did things start for you, where you decided that you wanted to start a company, and how has that process been? You know, take us back to the beginning of this journey for you.
That sounds exciting. It's quite 11 years ago, so quite a long journey. A long journey that actually was with success, what was actually quite challenges, sadness, sometimes even moments of giving up. Doing a project that requires a lot of scientific knowledge and only having my first bachelor degree was quite challenging. You push yourself more, but also in the same time, wanting to do more that really brought me to really being an entrepreneur. I think in 2015, when I first moved to the Netherlands, I started my first startup and the startup failed. That was quite a big push down in my mental health. However, it really brought me to realize that this is a great learning experience. And we shouldn't sort of underestimate what this 1 year and a half taught me when I brought the concept for Fruitive into an idea to some investors and to some partners. They were extremely encouraging me to do it. And I think that energy what gave me this exciting journey. As a Jordanian living in Rotterdam quite recently, it's quite nice to be in a country where you still don't speak the language. So it brings you up more challenges. But the more challenges it brings you, I think, the more the better the success taste.
So you had moved to Rotterdam, you had decided to, you know, start a second company, you had this idea. Where does the process actually begin for you as far as like starting the company, explain to us a little bit more about, you know, discovering this novel, you know, ingredient, and actually getting this process put together. Like, what are those first, you know, building blocks for the company?
I think the first 2 years of my first research started, I was 17 and I'm quite stubborn because I was like in the university, I'm going to find this novel sweetener. I became the laughing stock. I'm not going to lie. Because, you know, I was 17 and I really wanted to prove a point. But I think in the same time that sort of the laughing stock moment came into reality, I started digging quite deep. And the problem that we always sort of go back to, there are sweeteners in the market. They work well, but they're either chemicals or they actually taste really bad. Bitter aftertaste, they don't work in products. And those challenges are nonstop, but also they're very expensive. And I think people sort of tend not to use sweeteners because of the expensive prices. Well, for the process that I had to do, I understood all of those challenges, but I was like, we need to have a product that we can actually embrace. For me, sugar was a product that I really embrace. I'm not a person who is against sugar. In fact, I encourage people to consume sugar in very limited quantities on a daily basis. I believe that we actually can have a bit of an average balanced diet, and that's what should be a diet about. But for our sweetener, we took sugar, we reverse engineered it completely. We understood what's unique about sugar, what it gives us this shelf life extension, crystallization, the beautiful taste that when it melts in your mouth. And we were like, we're going to get all of the characteristics and make a sweetener out of it. We wanted to produce a sweetener that people also understood because, you know, all of those E numbers and all those complex names, which to be honest, I really can't even pronounce. It's something that people also really hate. So we wanted to make something understood and a product that almost everybody had consumed, an apples, a pears. And this product actually quite nice because people can relate to. I mean, we all had an apple one day. And I think for a product that we wanted to keep it simple, we use simple ingredients and simple process yet complex. As a specialized in fermentation, I really believe fermentation as the new path for innovation in food industry. And I was lucky enough to be able to get it more from just a bio-reverse engineering to a process that actually built around fermentation. And it was quite exciting because the first 1 kilogram was ever produced in 2016. And that was during my first company. And it was just in theory back then. You know, everything was just theoretical. So I was just sort of guessing it could happen. And in 2016, when it happened, I remember really well, it didn't taste great, frankly, but for me, it was like the moment of success.
Right. So you had finally created, you know, this product. At what point does it turn into kind of where you're at today, where, you know, you bring on some other teammates, you know, you start pursuing, you know, the other required assets to running a business? Like when does it take that next, you know, jump? When does Fruitive grow to kind of the next stage?
The interest from corporate companies really started in 2018 when they heard about our sweetener. And we were not even a company yet. We were not even registered legally as a company. One corporate company have reached out to us and they set up a meeting with me personally. And that moment I realized if they see this as a value proposition in the market, I need to bring it to the value into the company itself. When this moment happened, we really started to realize the need to make this happen. I started talking to some of the investors, some partners, and they all the one who are encouraged me to reach this point. I don't think I could have ever reached this point alone. I have some of the best team ever because they are like my family. I'm surrounded with 157 investors. It's a bit a lot of investors, but we are literally one big family. I think being an entrepreneur takes a lot of courage, but with that, actually, your support, your mutual support will not be done.
So tell us about kind of the other products that you know, we'll talk about, I think, some of the fundraising stuff in a minute, but tell us about some of the products that you have now or you know, the kind of the biggest value proposition that you're offering now that you've kind of grown to where you are and that you have more of a diverse product line. You know, what is the value proposition, and can you tell us about some of these other products that, you know, that you've developed along the way?
Absolutely. You know, it gets me so excited to talk about those products because some of them came accidentally along the lots of trials, a lot of trying out so many different ingredients. Some of them really been brought organically to a beautiful idea. But I think the interest we had in 2019 have showed me that we need to provide ingredients that actually plant-based, functional, and also at the same time, most importantly, affordable. And I was talking to so many other startups in which they are having a hard time to supply their ingredients, but also at the same time, they wanted to become sustainable and all of this. Our products, of course, all of them comes from side streams, all of them from upcycled fruits and vegetables. So none of them contains any CO2 consumption. They actually save the CO2. But of course, they provide functionality. We have preservative that made from carrot, for example, a thickener made from banana skin, a emulsifier from potato, a fat replacer from avocado seed, and the last one, which is our latest innovation, our casein, which mimic a DNA sequence of casein that come from the cow. That is, let's say, the hardest work that we have done. And we are now also using precision fermentation. That's our next, which we released in December. So it's extremely exciting.
Can you kind of explain the challenges of, you know, running a novel ingredient company, you know, from the early stage perspective, and as you're growing and trying to bring in capital and bring in partners? And can you kind of explain to the audience why that novel ingredient process is just really, you know, the difficulty and challenges of doing that, and kind of the justification that continues to happen, you know, with your partners and things like that in the earlier stages? Would love to hear about that.
For any startup, for any entrepreneur that actually going through a moment where the ingredients being specified and actually already been known as a novel food and they're required to do the applications, make this moment as the best moment of your life. Of course, it's easier said than done. For me, that moment was really hard because I was trying to convince investors to invest in something that actually is going to take a lot of time. The application, for example, minimum 12 months. And convincing investors to invest in something for a more longer term was to some extent challenging. But also there are investors who believe in longer term investment plan. And don't be afraid, especially for startups, to show that actually in your presentations, in your cash flow, because it's really needed. One most important lesson I've learned during all those novel food applications is also rely on yourself to apply for it. There are actually ways you could save money. An application could easily cost from 150 to 300,000 euros. And there are lots of smart ways you could save on money, but also at the same time, we sometimes don't compromise on money, because unfortunately, if you make one tiny mistake on those kind of application, 12 months actually has been lost. But it's been amazing. And I think for every startup, they go into those kind of momentum. It's good momentum. Don't be afraid. Go for it. Show the people what you can do. And there are investors who will invest in such a novel, but it's challenging.
Yeah. So, I mean, the challenge here is that, you know, there are some companies who can take on capital and then they can put a product on the shelf, or they already have a product on the shelf and they just need to reach more shelves or more distribution or whatever it is. And so now with, I think, biotechnology and the, you know, the kind of company that you have, excuse me, is, you know, you have to explain and justify and kind of have this timeline of accomplishments. That's a lot different, right? So it's like, in 6 months, we will have this certification. And then 6 months later, you know, we'll have this first prototype. And then another 6 months later, we'll have this application of the, so like the it's hard, I would imagine, when you're an investor, when you're not seeing that product yet on the shelves. So it's very interesting to hear, you know, that experience. And I guess maybe a lot of entrepreneurs don't understand, you know, if they have these ideas, especially more scientific ideas, like what it really takes, and like what those, you know, what those things on the timeline are that are going to, you know, move things forward.
And, you know, I think those sort of timelines usually, I recall really well when I started Fruitive, I sort of had kind of a lot of hope really quickly. And I was like, you know, within a year, we can do this. And within a year, we could achieve this. But the more I've learned business and the more I became more longer term in Fruitive as an entrepreneur, I learned that it's okay to have time. If the product will mature, you're going to learn along the way. You're going to become even more mature yourself to learn more of the challenges. But of course, investors sometimes want to see results, and it's understandable. I mean, you want to show them a cash flow that within a year or two, their turnover will come back. But using fermentation and biotech industry really require patience, because we're not developing product only for today. We're developing products that actually for the future term, for next 20, 50, even 100 years. And that's sort of why we are not only promising product for the industry right now, but have a promising future. And that's actually what really counts.
So tell us about, you know, the fundraising process that you've gone through over the last couple of years. I know that you've had a few different, you know, rounds that you've been, that you've done, but specifically in the last, you know, couple of years, 2020, 2021. Can you just tell us in general what that was like, what the strategy was for you, and maybe how it was different from, for maybe other brands? Just kind of walk us through, you know, what the fundraising process was like for Fruitative, and then I'll follow up with a few other questions.
Amazing, of course. Well, you know, for any startup, when they start actually raising funds, they underestimate the value of the company and their proposition. And I think I personally did, because you go into a bit of desperate mode to offer more shares with less money so you can just actually start your company. But that's something I personally had in the beginning. And I think I was lucky enough that I was able to strike first deal with the first investors that actually I could buy some of the shares back. So really always for each startup, remember those kind of terms. I think my first startup experience really taught me how kind of those things should work. But as an experience, the first fundraising usually always challenging, because sometimes you don't have enough reputation. Sometimes there's not a lot of investors who actually have this invest in your startup backed, but also sometimes the product has not been prototype or there's not clients. For us, we went through all of those challenges, and being Jordanian in the Netherlands with no reputation, that also came with a lot of heavyweights. But I think where one of the most important advice we got was just stick to what you believe, show your proposition, and that was good for our business model. For 2020, we raised funds and we started actually arranging for our A round investment. And we started arranging for that because we knew we wanted to take Fruitive to the next level. And we knew actually taking a company to the next level really require investments and require those investments with no actually other way around it. Those money actually usually we used to spend it mostly on trials, on R&D. Specifically, and of course, into HR. One of the other main challenges we had for the investment in 2021, of course, COVID was coming. So we had also a COVID year. So it was also a lot of investors who were not really investing as much. But I think with all of that happened, it is really possible. And, you know, we are here.
are there any other fundraising, you know, best practices that you would share with, you know, younger startups or aspiring entrepreneurs, you know, anything that you wish you would have known, you know, about investment in general before you started?
Negotiate. I actually never thought I could do this. Negotiate.
You can always negotiate. Every conversation you can negotiate.
Negotiate, especially negotiating, actually you could buy your share back, because that's something I don't think I would have dared otherwise, but it was amazing. You know, every entrepreneur, their company is their baby. So it's so hard for them to give it away. Make commitment to maybe make certain revenue in a certain lead time. And then that's actually a great position for negotiation. And then you can buy some of the shares back. It's a great for the investors because they can actually get some of the money back. But also it's a great for the entrepreneur because they have their shares. So don't be afraid. Negotiate. If the investor wants to invest in you, they will invest in you. And even negotiating will show them that you are a tough entrepreneur. Yeah. So don't be afraid.
You got to show some skin.
Exactly.
Hey everyone, Eric here. Did you know that there's 1.3 billion tons of waste generated each year by the food industry globally? The Plant-Based Business Podcast is created with support from Hira, Europe's fastest growing plant-based meat company. Rooted in activism and the desire to drive positive change, the company's credentialed R&D team, the Tech Rebels, is spearheading a new food frontier that prioritizes sustainability. Going beyond what's been technologically possible to date, Hira's new approach uses nutrient-dense materials from industry, byproduct, and non-utilized plant sources. So imagine, instead of just focusing on proteins from a legume seed, Hira is finding ways to leverage the functionality of whole plants in their naturally occurring structures. Over the past year, Hira has quadrupled the size of its expert R&D team and will launch up to 10 new products this year. Follow Hira Foods, that's H-E-U-R-A, on LinkedIn to see how it's tackling the big, unsolved global food challenges using low carbon footprint technologies. Now back to the show.
You know, you were generally an early user when Vevolution kind of relaunched our platform in the last, you know, year and a half or so. In general, can you tell the audience, you know, what was it like utilizing Vevolution, and give us a little bit of information about what it was like to be an early user? Because, you know, sometimes people don't want to be one of the first users on a new marketplace or a new platform, right? So there are advantages and disadvantages of that. So can you tell us about that?
I think I could never see its advantage for something that you actually sign up. And actually, you sign up as to be a part of community, especially when you believe in the same ethics. You know, we all are in advocating for plant-based, for innovation, for food innovation. So we are actually sort of needed to grow together. I always say for me, as an experience that I had, was amazing to see that shift, because you actually try it out in the beginning and you see the improvement along the way. As a user, as an end user, you don't actually sometimes notice how much work going in between. And that actually one of the incredible parts. I recall really well some of them in the beginning where more features are coming up. And I remember there was a process to add the pitch deck and the presentation. And that really happened. I recall like day afterwards when I opened the website, and it was such an amazing process to see. You witness not only a community growth, but you witness actually a success growth. And you feel like you're a part of it because you tried your best to be in it.
When we launched Vevolution as this marketplace, that it wasn't like a final product, right? We're always continuously improving, just like you are with your product. We're always improving ours, and we have new functionality that came out that will come out, you know, tomorrow or next week, right? So it's always improving.
Exciting.
It's always about it's always about improving the experience for the startups, but also the investors and the other, you know, people who are part of the community. And you know just like a food company or any company, you collect feedback and you iterate and improve, and sometimes your ideas that you had will change down the line. So
it's also about continuous improvement, and that's actually what we saw in the platform in the past year, and especially the past year when COVID came. The platform became really important to everybody,
right?
Because all those online virtual communities have appeared. And for me personally, I saw a huge amount of actually new users and new companies in it. That was sort of a good way out from those pandemic. And I think this is where, for me personally, I found the value in it, because I became connected to people like investors, but also clients, partners, friends even. And I think that's people what they need to sign up for.
Yeah, it's we're so glad that you are part of Evolution. So I appreciate it. One question I have, do you have any advice for startups who may be, and you can you don't need to name any names, but do you have any advice for startups who may be hesitant to collaborating or working with corporate partners?
In the beginning, it could be a bit scary, but having their interest in the first place, it's amazing. I mean, they bring extreme amount of knowledge and experience that actually a startup may not be able to bring easily. The people who actually work in corporate, their experience sometimes could be 25 years plus. And the amount of funds, it's incredible. So I know it sounds scary, but if a corporate company would want to actually steal somebody's idea, they wouldn't contact you. But right. Actually, contacting you is a proof of not to be scared. They want you.
Right. Yeah, that's so
easy. Go in it. And one of the best lessons is never go, don't overestimate the value of non-disclosure agreement. It's important, but also go with the flow. Share information, because be honest, be transparent. Talk about how can they help you. And always ask the question, what am I getting back in return? Because that's the important part.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that, you know, especially now that we're seeing large companies who are really starting to invest in the space, like this is a big shift for the world in general. And so, you know, I think the encouragement, like that's a really good point. If they're reaching out to it all, then that's, you know, that just gives you so much, that's just improving your value proposition right there. And there's a lot of ways to kind of navigate that. So do you have some goals for 2022 and 2023 in general and kind of beyond? And now that you're kind of moving forward, like what are some things we can expect from Foodative, you know, this year and maybe next year?
Wow. That's a very interesting question. We are currently in our round of closing our round of investment around A, but also in the same time, we have published today that we are expanding globally with our partners to Australia, New Zealand, and the US market. So please stay tuned. We would be actually licensing our process to more countries. We know we can't do it alone, so we work with partners, but we are working in a very highly top secretive project. It's going to be more innovative than we ever released. And that is actually planned for 2023. It is really going to change the whole industry right now, because what we will be doing is providing not only a product that actually we all need, but actually the excitement of it for me, when I started developing it 2 years ago, I was like, that could never work. And it just really pushes companies like us to others also to push them that we need innovation and we need those kind of crazy, crazy idea. And those crazy ideas, those are usually the one that pays off.
Yeah, there's no reward without sacrifice, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have any favorite ways to spend free time or favorite ways to sort of have that self-care or kind of ways to rest and ways to take care of yourself, and any recommendations for that for other entrepreneurs as well?
I think it's really important to look after yourself. As an entrepreneur, you sometimes forget about how exhausted you are and how your mental health actually is. Trust me, you don't want to see me after a long day. yoga could really help. I mean, for me, it's a way that I sort of kind of disconnect from the whole universe. And sometimes even at the office, I start doing yoga, and I love painting. I'm a very bad painter. But I love painting, and I've been doing it since COVID started. And those combination of artistic yet also yoga, which gives you this mind relaxing, it becomes a really good way. But also just find your own way. Just, you know, like a lot of startups go and sort of listen to things and sort of say, yeah, I need to do it like this because somebody worked for him. Well, no, it worked for me, but it may not work for you. What's you actually good at? Probably what you like, you know, right. What you enjoy the most, probably singing in the bathroom or being crazy like me.
Right.
That's what you should do.
Well, we all need to take care of ourselves. I'm glad. I hopefully will also make it to yoga today or tomorrow. Moyad, it's been really great to speak to you from Foodative. Thanks, Moyad.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Hello, Eric here, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Vivolution. We're building the world's leading plant-based and cell-ag community and marketplace. Head on over to www.vevolution.com to join our marketplace of investors and startups building solutions for a brighter future. In 2021, more than 25 startups secured partial or full round funding on Vevolution. And if you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. And please consider sharing it on your preferred social media channels. It really helps more people discover the positive stories we're sharing from around the world. Please give us a shout and tag us when you tell others about the podcast. You can find us on all social media channels at Vevolution. And you can email us at hello@vevolution.com if you want to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners. As always, thank you to Bridie Allison Child, who edits the podcast, and all of our guests and you, our listeners, for supporting the show. See you next time.